It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24-7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way with you from Omaha, Nebraska. In fact, just right around the corner from TD Ameritrade Park. I can look outside of my hotel room window. We're coming to you from the hotel today because the ballpark not yet open for picking up credentials and getting set up. That'll all come afterwards. As soon as I get done off the air here, I'll be headed over there to get over there and get set up. The teams have practices today on the field, and they're just over an hour on the field today. And it's a little bit different, just like it always has. But the nice thing is that obviously there's 100% fan capacity. This town is teeming again. It's jam-packed. They had the U.S. Olympic swimming trials here going on with some current and former Longhorns involved in that. But it has been this town has been hopping and jumping the way Omaha usually is in June. Jeff Howell's alongside. Jeff, I'm sure you saw that by now. It was made official. Pretty much David Pierce has said all along that he would probably, as he said, as Coach Royal once said, dance with what brung him and go with Ty Madden to start game one of the World Series. It's official now. The team has announced that this morning. Ty Madden will start for Texas in the opener tomorrow night, or Sunday night, excuse me, against Mississippi State. And the Bulldogs are going to counter with their right-hander Will Bednar, who is 7-1.
So, hell of a matchup.
Yeah. So they're in it's funny you bring that up because – one thing I did around Omaha, and I've got a little better handle on this now for the folks who were asking, you know, for restaurant recommendations and things like that.
Hold on, Craig. Before you go any further,
yeah,
you mentioned restaurant recommendations.
Yeah.
Have you found an appropriate sausage gravy alternative?
Yes. In fact, I'd forgotten about one.
Boom. How about that? Look at that. Yeah.
I'd forgotten. I had actually forgotten about another place, and it came back to me when I got up here. It was a place that I'd gone to with Bill Little back a few years ago on one of the many runs, because this is my ninth time to come up here with Texas and the 11th time overall, counting a couple of times I came up to work the National Championship Series to call it for Westwood One. And there's a place out on the west side of town, and called the Farmhouse Cafe, and it's one of those places, Jeff, like so many in the upper Midwest. Did you ever go to the Machine Shed in Urbandale, Iowa? It's right outside Des Moines.
Can't say that I have.
No. Okay.
You've made that Ames trip several more times than I have. So.
Yeah. It's worth, if you're going in, say, either the day before a Longhorn football game at Iowa State, where they'll be this fall, or staying overnight, and you have enough time for breakfast the next day. This is a place worth visiting. It's in Urbandale, and it's called a Machine Shed, but it's like this big farm that you're going to, and they have all kinds of your down home cooking, home style type of breakfast things, and a couple of things that they specialize in. They got real big pancakes and stuff, and they also have these gigantic cinnamon rolls. I mean, they're like the size of a hubcap. I mean, they're
nice.
Really big. Yeah. Well, this place here in Omaha is like it. The Farmhouse Cafe is like that. And Bill Little first took me back to years and years ago, and sometime in the mid-2000s, I guess it was. And so what I decided to do when I got to Omaha and when I landed here with the team on Wednesday, late Wednesday afternoon, was we came over to the team came over to the hotel, and of course you get all your bags and you unload the bags and all that other kind of stuff, and do that and get into the room. And then after dinner, I thought, you know, I've got a little time before I've got to get some work done while it's still daylight. I want to see, or at least try to see, which local establishments that I liked or had been to or whatever had survived the pandemic or whatever and were still around, and which ones are not. So I did a little reconnaissance. I did it Wednesday evening, and I did it yesterday.
Food recon, if you will.
I did a little food recon. I did it after the team practice down at Bellevue East High School, and I did it again yesterday evening just to kind of check some places off the list because, as you might imagine, in all these years of coming up here, and like I said, this is the 11th time for me, over all of those years, it was inevitable that this list of places where I had eaten in the past, either in the company of folks affiliated with Texas or other media or whatever, might get a little bit lengthy. Now, some of the places have gone away, as we know. Mr. C's, the immortal Mr. C's steakhouse, was incredible, and it went away, I think, around 2007. And then we told the story about what happened with Leavenworth Cafe. And that's what, for folks who didn't know, that's what Jeff's reference was to about the biscuits and gravy, the sausage gravy and all that.
Now,
the,
I was sad.
The Robert E. Lee.
I was sad, Craig, because the day after, when did we do that story? We did that, I guess, Wednesday?
Yeah, or, well, let's see, I left, I think.
Or Tuesday.
I think we did it Tuesday, yeah.
Wednesday morning, that popped up on my Facebook timeline, was a picture I took of my big plate of the Robert E. Lee at Leavenworth Cafe. Yeah. I was real sad for a second, knowing that if I go back to Omaha, I got to find another place to get sausage gravy.
Well, I went by.
As if I need sausage gravy right now.
I rolled down Leavenworth Avenue. Because the other thing, by the way, that I needed to get, fine, that it wasn't just about restaurants, Jeff. I had to find a new dry cleaners. Somebody said, why would you need a dry cleaners in Omaha? Remember, I mentioned this, I think, on Monday. I said, in trips to Omaha for me over the times with Texas, it's usually either feast or famine. You're usually here and only, and this has happened a couple of times, where they were chewing barbecue like they were the last time they were here in 2018 or in 2011. So in those days back then, before they even spread it out more and the travel more, you could be in here and out of here in 4 days. Now you're pretty much here a week, even if you play two games and lose two games. But it was either that or, in the case of 2003, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2009, and 2014, you could be here 2 weeks. And I know that's the hope of a lot of long events. It's the hope of all of us, hoping that, because if this team is here 2 weeks, that means they're probably playing for a national championship.
Now, time out for a sec, Craig. We got a text on the Specs text line, 337-3776. Rubber toe. I just want you to know I'm not headed down the road where my life is going to take me to a point where I'm sitting around naked, surrounded by a bunch of old dudes eating gravy. That is not what I'm talking about. I enjoy my gravy fully clothed in a maybe a nice diner with a nice cup of coffee or a nice glass of tea, maybe some eggs off to the side. Yeah, I will be fully clothed whenever I'm eating gravy. Craig, you okay?
I'm glad you had me choked up there for a moment. I'm glad you clarified that.
I was worried about you there for a second, partner.
No, I'm all right.
All right.
So, you know, when you're here for 2 weeks, clothes get dirty. Mm-hmm. You know, and certain things, and a lot of you've seen the coaches' polos and the shirts that I wear, a lot of those. I don't throw those in a washing machine. I actually dry clean those.
Well, some of those you need to dry clean at this point. You and I had this conversation off the air because there's some of those styles that Nike just doesn't make anymore.
Yep.
So whenever that shirt gets a rip or a stain or it's no longer fit for you for broadcasting purposes, it gets retired never to return again.
That's right. That's exactly right. So I had a dry cleaners for years and years. It was an old kind of grimy little place, but it was on, of all places, Leavenworth Avenue. And I'd used it probably, gosh, I probably discovered that back in 2003 because 2002 I was like ran out of clothes. It was my first trip to Omaha, and I learned, you know, if you're gonna be bring clothes that need dry cleaning, you need to either pack a heck of a lot or prepare to go to the cleaners. And I'm kind of somewhere in between. I bring a fair amount of clothes, but also, you know, it's good to have a dry cleaner.
Craig, are you like Bucky and I, where however many days Bucky and I have had this conversation, and it's one piece of knowledge from Bucky that really rings true, because it's a piece of advice my late grandmother gave me many years ago. My Nana, she once told me and my dad passed it on, made sure I remember. Anywhere, if you're going to go anywhere where you think you might be staying overnight, always make sure you take extra underwear.
Absolutely.
Never be caught slipping on a lack of underwear.
Nope.
So I have made that mistake once. So, Craig, were you, would somebody see you panic shopping like underwear, like a Walmart in the greater Omaha area back in 02? Did it get to that point?
I did back then. I don't anymore. In the interest of full disclosure, and I'll say this on the air right now, I packed 18 pairs of underwear.
There's something hilarious to me, Craig, about you going into Walmart to panic buy underwear. Like, we've seen people panic buy, you know, toilet paper or meat or whatever during COVID, and Craig is at a Walmart on the outskirts
out
of Omaha.
Out on Loop 680. I've done it. But it's been years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I take plenty of underwear and socks and a lot of, you know, washable things, because there's laundromats on every corner. You can wash stuff. I'm not worried about that. They even have it in the hotel as well, so I'm not worried about that. It's about dry cleaning stuff.
Yeah.
So I had to find another dry cleaners, and because the one I had on Leavenworth Avenue was had for years, they did not survive the pandemic. So that was part of my reconnaissance yesterday. But I did find another one. It's kind of a newer and spiffier one, also on Leavenworth. So
nice.
Yeah. So I was able to find another dry cleaner. So anyway, I went riding around and was looking at a lot of these, a lot of the restaurants and the places that I'd been to. Fortunately, most survived. Most have survived the pandemic, and they're excited about being back open again. And so there's lots of places there. If you're and I'll just rattle these off really quickly, and then we'll move on, because I know we've gotten a lot of questions from folks saying, "Hey, I'm going up there. Where should I eat? Where should I go?" That kind of thing. So I'm gonna give you. I made a list yesterday, and I'm just gonna give you that.
Now, before you start, Craig, are these power ranked in any way, shape, or form? Are you doing this by part of Omaha, or are you just going, hey, this is a bullet point list, go Google it yourself?
Yeah, it's pretty much that. I'll give you categories,
all
but,
right, cool.
But it's pretty bad. First of all, breakfast, like I said, the farmhouse is a good place. There's all kinds of, I've noticed around here in the downtown area, all kinds of coffee houses and things like that. So they're about on every corner. You can find those around as well. If you're interested in burgers, Dinkers, which is over there right near 480 and 30th Street, over near Martha Street, not far from the Gerald Ford birthplace. Dinkers has a good burger there. Cash only, it used to be. I don't know if they could survive doing cash only with the pandemic, but they used to be cash only. But they have an ATM in the place. Anyway, Stella's is a place on the south side in the Bellevue area, which is a good burger as well. Steaks, I mean, you can go from, you know, all the way to the top of the list, like Omaha Prime, if you want, to the mid-range ones, like Anthony's or Cashio's. Anthony's used to be a place where Augie would take the team. Those are steakhouses, and those are the Italian steakhouses I'm talking about. Then there's one also on the west side called The Drover, which is known for having what's called a whiskey steak. Or as my friend Howie Dinneroth, the executive producer of S1, calls it, the drunk steak. So there's that. High-level Italian food at La Sola Mio. That was Augie's favorite place.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the team is doing a team meal there as well. And then Oscar's is a place for wings. Spencer's is another steak place, another higher-end steak place. It's across the street from us downtown here. And then if you're wanting ice cream, Zesto. I went to Zesto the other night and got a milkshake. I went to the one up in the Florence area.
Not Florence, Texas, USA.
No, Florence, Nebraska. There, it's a little bit different looking there.
I would imagine Nebraska.
A little bit different. It's just slightly different. So
they have an ice cream place. You're a step ahead already.
Yeah, and it's a good one. So there you are. There's kind of a rundown on some places there.
Cool. Couple of things before we get to the break, Craig. We talked about the Mavericks front office and their issues. Mark Stein, who's now with the New York Times covering the NBA, longtime reporter who's followed the Mavericks, he reported about 10 minutes ago, Dirk Nowitzki is rejoining the organization as a special advisor. He reports Nowitzki's first assignment at the request of Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, assisting the team in its search for a new head of basketball operations and then head coach. It's not an everyday role. Dirk turns 43 on Saturday. He's holding off on taking a full-time role, but Mark Cuban has asked him to help in the search process. So Dirk Nowitzki is going to be a pretty big part of how this Mavericks, or we assume is going to be a pretty big part of how this Mavericks front office is going to be formed, because, you know, Luka Doncic is going to sign that Supermax extension because he's just going to leave way too much money on the table to go elsewhere. But what that gives you, and we've seen other franchises deal with this, now you've got, Craig, about that 4 to 5 year window where you've got to go figure it out or he won't be back when it's time to sign that second extension. And speaking of Luka Doncic, Craig, we have completed our pack break Friday. And if you saw Snoop and I go nuts on Twitter, this is why.
They were like, we can hear y'all all down the hall.
So two big ones. So Patrick Williams, the rookie for the Chicago Bulls, his cards are actually pretty hot right now. This is a Patrick Williams autograph, numbered to 49, holding that up on Twitch. And Craig, I am a fan of the Dallas Mavericks. I'm a fan of Luka Doncic. I have never, in the basketball cards I've bought, I have never pulled a Luka Doncic card from a pack of trading cards, ever. But this time, I pull a Luka Doncic that is a two-colored double jersey patch card of Luka Doncic right there. That was one of the memorabilia cards that was in that box, and Snoop and I went nuts when we unearthed it. That's one of the best pulls I've ever had in my life. Opening trading cards. So again, big shout out to Brown Eye Clothing. They've been our partners on this deal. BrownEyeClothing.com. 20% of their proceeds going to go to colorectal cancer awareness in the greater Austin area. And you see the lid right there. So Craig, that is one hell of a way to end that segment. And we might do it from time to time, but at least in terms of the structure we've got with it right now, this was it. So pulling a Luka card. How about that?
Nice. Well done. Nicely done. So I can see why you'd be all fired up about that then.
Indeed.
Nice. Okay.
DEFCON Dave was worried
because of the noise element.
Yeah, we were going pretty nuts.
Typically, when there's yelling in this building, it's usually never for anything good. So, but this was good yelling.
Yeah.
Usually, it's because something broke, or heaven forbid, something's on fire, or whatever. But
no. Sure.
Good yelling.
Good in this case.
Hey, and big shout out. I want to give our promotions department a shout out because, Craig, as we're going on remotes more, those guys, you know, whether it's Derek or Trevor, Christina, our promotions folks they're doing yeoman's work, making sure we're set up and we're good to go. Derek was out there with me this morning at the Colt McCoy camp. He just got back in the office and was kind enough. I was getting ready for the Colt interview. I was drinking some water and left my Yeti sitting out at St. Michael's. So Derek was kind enough to bring my Yeti back in the studio. And I just want to give a shout out to the Horns, our folks in promotions and that handle our social media. They do a fantastic job. You don't hear them on the air ever, but they do an awesome job each and every day.
Yep. I totally agree with you. Coming up next, we'll have one more edition of The Notebook. And like we said, we'll actually be done just a little tiny bit earlier than we normally are with the show, so you can hear Snoop's outstanding work there with the highlight montage he did to Back Home in Omaha. So that's coming up as well as we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn. By the way, I didn't leave this out on purpose. It was just wanting to wait until we'd gotten taken care of a lot of the official business. But you should know, Jeff, that on Wednesday, the day I travel up here, for the fourth time, I became a grandfather on Wednesday.
Congratulations, Craig.
Yep. My daughter, Haley, and her husband, Tyler have a new addition to their family. Haley gave birth to a 7-pound, 9-ounce baby girl, Ruthie Mae Carroll, her name. So mom and youngster are all great. They go home today from the hospital. So, yeah, it's two grandsons and two granddaughters now. So it's all even at two apiece.
So you're a boompah for the fourth time now.
Boompah Roman numeral four. Or boompah, you know, whatever you would say, you know.
When you say it like that, I picture like a Super Bowl or a WrestleMania logo with like that Roman, nice bold letters, that Roman numeral four hanging there.
Boompah 4.0, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm excited about that for them. So that's really cool. All right. Time now for another edition of The Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
Since we're keeping score, right?
Yeah, it's our last Longhorn Notebook of the broadcast week, Craig. We'll be back on Monday with more Longhorn goodness. And actually, if you missed any of these Sark cuts, a couple of different ways you can hear them. One, when we're done today, you can get to hornfm.com and go to the podcast page and listen back to them. Or Triple Option Boys, RBKD, will be breaking this down this afternoon. And anytime you get Rod and Kevin and Brad talking college football and give them a reason to talk college football, not that they ever need a reason, it's always quality radio. So those guys, I know we're planning on doing something with these today. We just went over them pretty quick here in the first segment. But one that I wanted to save and make it its own segment is, and again, this was a quick media availability we had with Steve Sarkisian yesterday, prior to him being the keynote speaker for the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Austin area, their summer luncheon. And by the way, again, also get to hornfm.com. The very last segment of Bucky and Aaron's show today was my sit-down interview with Colt McCoy from his camp this morning out at St. Michael's. So a lot of great content you can get at hornfm.com. But right now, this was the last question Sark got. It was about Keelan Robinson. And yes, Texas took him as a running back to back up Bijan Robinson and be in the mix with Roschon Johnson. But Sark touches on that, but he also touches on something else, which really, really piqued my interest. So this is Sark on Keelan Robinson.
Keelan's a really versatile player. He's a guy that is a very good runner. I think he averaged almost 6.5 yards a carry as a true freshman for us. But he gives us a lot of versatility. You can call him the gadget play guy in essence. You know, he's really jet sweep, bubble screens, perimeter screens. So he gives us some versatility at the position where, you know, we maybe didn't have quite the depth that we wanted to offset, obviously, what Bijan, Roschon bring. Obviously, we got the addition of Jonathan Brooks. So now I feel a lot more comfortable with the position.
So it's interesting there, Craig, that he talks about him not just in terms of the depth at running back, but being a gadget play guy. And if you go back and watch his offense at Alabama, go look at the number of different ways he got Devontae Smith and Najee Harris the football. Like, I say this all the time. Like, Najee Harris, yes, he was a workhorse running back. He ends up winning the Doak Walker Award. He has over 200 carries. But this is a guy that also caught a lot of footballs. Like, his final numbers last year in a 13-game season, 251 carries, but he caught 43 balls. And Devontae Smith, we saw the number of different ways they used him. And the fact that Sark is looking at a guy like Keelan Robinson, and I would imagine he looks at a guy like Jordan Whittington, and you know he's had probably half of a practice, if that, with Jake Smith. You know, I go back, and let me preface what I'm about to say by saying this. We talk a lot about the differences between Sark and Tom Herman. And if we do that a lot, it's because if I go back and listen to a Longhorn Blitz podcast from the transition from Mac to Charlie, or what I wrote in that transition at Horns 24/7, or go back and listen to a podcast or an interview I did going from the transition from Charlie to Tom Herman and read anything I wrote, it was a lot of the same. Like, you just could naturally compare the new guy to the previous guy and things you didn't like about the previous guy and things you hope change under the new guy. So that's all we're doing here. But I say that to say this. I think about Tom Herman's offense, Craig, and I think about what he wanted that H receiver position to be, that slot receiver position. And he talked about it last spring. I know we had him on at Horns 24/7 for a Q&A with our subscribers, and he talked about on there, you know, he liked the versatility with Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington, and he talked about using those guys in multiple ways and getting them into the backfield, not just handing them the ball on a jet sweep or giving it to them on a bubble screen. And whether it was just the wonky offseason or injuries with both of those guys or whatever it was, we never really saw the full tilt experience of what that looked like. So I think it's twofold here. I think, one, can those guys, A, be healthy, and B, make themselves worthy of getting touches within the offense? Because you've got guys that are going to need to get their hands on the football in this deal, right? Like Bijan Robinson's going to need X number of, not just carries, he's going to need X number of touches per game for you to be successful. And Sark wants to get the tight ends involved. And Joshua Moore was your leading receiver last year. And Troy O'Meary did some really nice things in the spring. And think about where he was before the knee injury. So there's only one football to go around. A lot of guys need it. So those guys are going to have to earn their touches. But if they do, Craig, this offense can go, it can show a dimension that we probably haven't seen from a Texas offense since kind of late Greg Davis, early Brian Harsin, when things were clicking the right way, and there were times where we saw Marquise Goodwin used in that manner. There were times where we saw DJ Monroe used in that manner. When you've got those kinds of guys that have unique special traits that you can use in a multitude of ways, it just gives you an edge offensively that's really, really tough for an opponent to game plan for, because you never know where that guy is going to line up. And, you know, we talked about this, I think, on the Blitz this week, and I think we talked about it maybe last week too. And, Craig, you'll remember this, like that BCS National Championship game where Texas lost to Alabama. You know, Nick Saban rarely calls opponents by name, like opposing players by name. He'll usually just use the number.
Right.
Who were the two guys he talked about, even after the game? Like, everyone's like, oh, once Colt went out, you know, he's like, hey, look, he's like, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said 84 and 26 scared us when we watched him on film. That was Marquise Goodwin and DJ Monroe. Mm-hmm. Because they've just got the, I mean, you're talking about two guys with legitimate world-class speed. They're world-class athletes. And right now on the Specs text line, 337-3776, Ramontz Taylor, what he did in 2005, that's exactly what we're talking about. Like, Craig, could you nail down what Ramontz Taylor's position was in 2005?
He was positionless.
Exactly. Like if you had if he was in your starting lineup, you would just probably label him athlete or all purpose or whatever, because you didn't know where he was going to line up. That's the kind of versatility we're talking about. That's what Sark is talking about doing with Keelan Robinson. And a guy like Jake Smith that's got that skill set, a guy like Whittington that's got that skill set. Heck, even a guy like Bijan Robinson. Like I say it all the time, like if Bijan Robinson played wide receiver, I'm almost convinced he'd be one of your top one or two receivers on this roster. Like, he's got that kind of skill set. So the fact that Sark, at least conceptually, CB mentioned another one, DeJay Johnson was kind of like that. At least conceptually, if you hear an offensive coordinator or play caller that's got a plan on how to use guys like that, man, as a Texas fan, that's got to make you excited knowing that, okay, you can at least, Sark's not going to give away any trade secrets right now, but you can at least see the vision and you can think about players that were either like Ramontz Taylor used the right way, or a guy like Marquise Goodwin or DeJay Johnson that for a multitude of reasons we never quite saw used to the fullest possible extent. It's really exciting to think about where this offense can go and what it can be with that extra dimension added to it, with those versatile playmakers.
Well, he has his vision on what he wants to do with those guys, and the key is A, like you say, getting those kinds of guys, and then B, how you utilize them. And it's pretty clear from the way Sark is talking about it what he has in mind. He has a multifaceted purpose in mind for those kinds of players.
And I think the difference too, Craig, now compared to when you talk about, you know, like CB mentions DeJay, or you know, even thinking about like Marquise Goodwin, you only, at that time in the offense, you really only had one of those guys. Now, I know in 12, like DeJay and Marquise Goodwin, DJ Monroe were on the roster at the same time, but by that point, I think we all kind of knew what DJ Monroe's niche was, and DeJay is a true freshman, and you know, DeJay had his ups and downs early in his career, certainly. But, you know, I think now, not to say it's going to be the 2005 offense, but you think back to that 05 offense, and you had a couple of different guys like that. Like, RT was certainly one of those guys. You know, Quan was a guy, Craig, that played multiple positions in high school and could do, you know, a lot of different things. And even though he was an older freshman, as a freshman, ends up being a really pivotal part of that offense. You know, Brian Carter was kind of another one of those guys that came to Texas as an athlete and ended up playing a really big role for that national championship team. So you had several of those guys that were capable of doing different things. I think that's kind of potentially what you've got now, knowing the flashes that some of these guys have had, certainly what the promise was for those guys as recruits, what Tom Herman's plans were for some of those guys, and now what Sark's plan is for a Keelan Robinson or, again, a Jake Smith or a Jordan Whittington. The fact that you've got multiple options now, it's not like you were – I think back to the BYU game in 13, Craig, and I know for a lot of Texas fans, I know you blocked that out and just that's filed back somewhere, yeah, right. Never to
it's
be.
It's like, must you think back to that?
But I think back to that game and, you know, kind of the situation Texas was in with DeJay. At that time, you only had one of those guys because, remember, Craig, he was a really big part of the game plan. And then, what, second or third play from scrimmage? Sprains his ankle, and then as Major later talked about, hey, your game plan basically went to crap at that point because you had built it around that guy. Well, that's the problem is when you've got one of those guys and you build it around it and they something happens, then it goes to crap. Now that you've got several of those guys, you know, if something happens to Jake Smith, well, okay, plug Keelan Robinson in there. Or something happens to Keelan Robinson, okay, now that's more touches for Bijan or more touches for Jordan Whittington. The fact that they've got several of those guys I think should just put you at ease that if Sark's going to build this offense and make those versatile guys a focal point of it, it's not just you're hoping against hope and the pucker factor is really high every game, just hoping that guy makes it through.
Yeah, and you're right. And that's the mark of the teams that really do advance and become contenders is when you have multiple guys who can do that. Multiple guys who can hurt you in multiple ways. And if you only have one and he gets banged up, then like I said, you're throwing the playbook out the window and just, you know, holding on and doing the best you can with that. So, again, it's the track and the vision, I think, that Sark and his guys have for what they want to build here to have those multiple kind of guys.
Another name that kind of brought up on the text line, Craig, from that 05 team, Billy Pittman. Like, on both sides of the ball, how many guys did Mac and that staff recruit that were just like smaller school, high school quarterbacks that, hey, just put the ball in our best athlete's hands and, you know, let him go do what he does? They had a lot of those guys. And not just, I mean, Brian Carter went to the Woodlands, but like they had a lot of those guys that did a little bit of everything in high school. It wasn't kind of, it seems like his recruiting has gone on. Guys are more specialized. Like now when you see one of those guys, it's like, oh my gosh, this guy plays more than one position. Like, it's gotten really specialized, but now, back then, it was like, you know, especially the smaller school guys, I mean, they were playing. I think what Quan had, what, Craig, like 20, 25 interceptions as a defensive back in high school. Jordan Shipley played defense at Burnett. So it's just, it's fun to think back to where the game has gone that you used to see those guys all the time. Now you see a two-way guy, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy is like Dion out there at the high school level.
Yeah, right. You don't see it very it was often. Much more commonplace back in the day, that's for sure. All right, so there's our notebook for this hour to wrap up the week. When we come back, we had a few final notes, and then Snoop has cooked up something a little special here to end the show. We'll do that here with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
The Tower.
Ready or not, the game will approach on Sunday for the Longhorn Sunday evening. By the way, are you familiar with this tune, Jeff?
Who's the artist on this song? Is that like Bowling for Soup?
Okay. Yeah, this is Bowling for Soup.
It started out fine. It had some promise, and then it kind of it went downhill pretty quick. I'm not gonna lie. Like, it started out, I'm like, all right, cool, I'm with it, and then.
You know, some folks have said that about a lot of Bowling for Soup songs, you know. But you didn't like this one about Omaha? Waited all their life to get to Omaha?
I'll give them this, okay? It's not near as bad as the Scott Stapp baseball song.
Yeah, the Scott Stapp one's not making it on the air here. sad.
Don't tip Snoop, Craig. It is a Friday.
Yeah, but, well, it's funny that particular song, when I was, this goes back to about 05, I think, and he can really clarify. The guy who's coming in right behind us, Ronald John Elling III, Trey Elling, was my producer at the time, and I was doing the shows from Omaha. And of course, you had that song. And then, of course, you had the one that we're going to hear on the montage coming up from Todd Theobald, the Back Home in Omaha. And we were using the Back Home in Omaha as things like for features and bumping and stuff like that. But for the talk show, Trey rolled this out. He rolled out the Bowling for Soup.
there was a time when Bowling for Soup was, you know, one of the kind of, I guess, it bands of the moment kind of deal.
Yeah, and Trey was on top of it. He rolled that out. So that's what made
me think
about it.
They're from Denton, right, Snoop? I have that right? Bowling for Soup from Denton?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, a lot of those guys were music school guys up there. And so, yeah. That'll be the case. But anyway, I know there's a great deal of excitement about this. And the opinions have been varied as to who is the team to beat in this tournament. I think if Arkansas had beat North Carolina State, I think everybody would have said Arkansas is the team to beat. They've been the number one team in the country virtually the entire year. Certainly, you know, throughout once conference play started and on the rest of the year. But the question was, you know, who's the team to beat now? I know Texas is the highest remaining seed, but I will also submit to you and it sounds kind of silly to say this, because once there are eight teams in the bracket, all of them have really done some extraordinary things to get here. Vanderbilt has just been this model of stability all season long with Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, and they're going to be tough to handle, and they won it 2 years ago. Rocker was the MVP 2 years ago when they won the national championship. You have that. Arizona has perhaps the scariest power lineup in this group. Now, how they, you know, how that translate to a pitcher and defensive friendly ballpark like TD Ameritrade is remains to be seen, but we'll find out about that. Stanford perhaps maybe has had the scariest results when you consider the fact that they just absolutely pummeled Texas Tech, and NC State knocked off the number one team. That's on the one side. But having said all that, and I started to say this will sound a little silly, I think the side of the bracket the Longhorns are on is a more difficult one. Tennessee may be the hottest overall team coming in. Virginia feeling invincible with what they've done. And Mississippi State's a veteran ball club. This is going to be quite a challenge for Texas on Sunday night.
And real quick, as far as the Mississippi State pitching staff, we know it's going to be Will Bednar starting.
Yep.
I touched base with Robbie Falk, Craig, who covers Mississippi State for us at 24/7 Sports. I asked him about Landon Sims. He said that staff has managed his pitch count as such to where once they get to Omaha with him, all bets are off. So on everybody on that side of the bracket that faces Mississippi State, you could see a lot of Landon Sims in this tournament.
So in other words, it won't be like the Kevin Copps over 300 pitches and then finally run out of gas. He's got plenty to spare.
They made sure he had a lot of gas in his tank by the time they got here.
All right. It is Sunday evening, 5:45 airtime. First pitch just after 6 o'clock. We invite you to stay tuned for Shirts and Skins. But right now, as we for our man Snoop Daniel, did such an excellent job with what you're about to hear. And for my co-host Jeff Howe, I'm Craig Way. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you Monday from Omaha. But enjoy this as the Longhorns get ready for Omaha. Two balls, two strikes, two outs. Madden the windup, the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. 14 strikeouts, a complete game, two-hit shutout for Ty Madden, and the Longhorns take the series opener from the Houston Cougars.
It was right out of the train. Never seen a sky so crystal clear. Never walked.
One ball, two strikes, two outs. Here's the stretch and the 1-2 pitch. Swung on it and it is hit toward the gap. That'll fall in. Mitchell Daly is going to win this ball game. Daly around the third. Walk them off, Texas. The Longhorns have beaten OU.
I'm your man, I promise I can do it all.
Lucas Lucas into the windup. And the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. The ball game is over. And for the first time in 20 years, the Texas Longhorns have swept a three-game series from the Kansas Jayhawks in Lawrence, Kansas.
From the Texas hills to the Golden Gate to the warm Miami shore.
First pitch to Tommy Sacco. Swings here and a fly ball. Sinking liner to center. Diving catch. Antico caught it. He caught it. What a diving catch by Mike Antico to close out the bottom half of the sixth inning. What a play made by Mike Antico. Swings here and hits a ball well out to left. This would carry back to the warning track. You can say goodnight to it. Oppo Taco. Cam Williams drives it out of the ballpark over the left field fence, and the Longhorns extend the lead to 3-0. Into the windup and the 1-2 pitch. This is hit on the ground to first. Zach Zubia, who's had such a big game today, will step on the bag. And the Texas Longhorns have won the series from third-ranked TCU. They take 2 out of 3 from the Horned Frogs, and they win decisively today, 9-3. The stretch from Noah Short. Here's the 1-0 pitch. Zubia swings. He'll line it in the left field. Coming in to score, the walk-off run from third base is Eric Kennedy. The Longhorns win it 12-2. The Texas Longhorns are Big 12 Conference champions.
It all comes down to the final round.
Here's a pitch. Hit on the ground to first. Up with it. Stepping on the back. Murphy Staley. That ends the ball game. The Texas Longhorns in dominant fashion sweep through the Austin Regional, scoring double-digit runs in all three ball games. The Longhorns win this one over Fairfield 12-2, and Texas will be at home to host the Super Regional. Stretch, the 2-2 pitch, swing and a miss. He struck him out for the 37th time in its history, more than any other school in the nation. The Texas Longhorns are going to the College World Series. The Longhorns defeat South Florida, and they are Omaha bound in 2021.